We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Bucks won a f***ing NBA championship.
Yeah!
What? What?
He tries to take a pulse, babe.
Watching that basketball game, like, caused health problems for me.
Boogie hates racism and Chris Paul. And who cannot get on board with that platform?
If I've learned a lot, I'm not going to say it. That sounds too
bad. The Bucks do win it all. Pat Connaughton's numbers should be in the rafters.
Hey there. Welcome to the Eurostep, a Milwaukee Bucks podcast, proudly a part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network and GSPN, and presented by our pals at Prize Picks. I am Ty Windisch, your only host on this episode, as I was joined by the outstanding Tony East of the Locked On Pacers podcast to do a series check-in through two games. We talked about how the Bucks won game one, how the Pacers won game two, if either team can stop their respective stars who have been great offensively, meaning Damian Lillard and Pascal Siakam, adjustments we see coming, and more. And, you know, which team feels better about the series being split 1-1. I think both teams feel okay, but I think Indiana probably feels a little better. But we'll get to that on the podcast. Make sure you check out Tony's work at Tony R. East on Twitter. And of course, you can check out Lockdown Pacers wherever you watch or listen to the Eurostep. So without further ado, here is my chat with Tony East of Lockdown Pacers.
The second most important person from Oshkosh we're talking about today. Now with us to talk Pacers Bucks, get the Bucks perspective in. It's Ty Windisch from the Eurostep. Ty, what a series it's been so far. We can and will talk about Dame, talk about Pascal, the next adjustments as the series heads to Indy. But what have been kind of your overarching takes from these first two games, where I think both teams might actually feel good about the series being 1-1, which is really interesting?
Yeah, I mean, after game one, I was like, wow, basketball is great. And after game two, I was like, actually, it's dumb and no one should. No, I'm just kidding. I think there was a couple unsustainable things in both games, but the most unsustainable probably was Indiana shooting in game one. I mean, there was, I think, a little bit of just a new to the playoffs adjustment for a lot of players. Of course, it was talked about a lot that outside of really Siakam and sort of Miles Turner, not a ton of playoff experience on Indiana's roster. I feel like that certainly manifested itself hard in game one. And then in game two, I thought Indiana shot the ball extremely well. Turner, especially Siakam, I mean, just in his own category, he's been incredible the whole time. And Milwaukee, outside of Dame and Brooke Lopez, which is a pretty big but considering how many times they shot, couldn't hit a shot at all. And so I think the shooting will probably normalize a bit, although it might just normalize by more swings back and forth as we go, frankly. I guess we'll see. But I think it's been a pretty drastic swing from one side to the other. And I do think in terms of adjustments, and we'll talk specifically, I do think the Bucks need to figure out how to be less slow. Because even outside of the shooting variance or whatever else, they just looked slow in a way that enabled Indiana to do pretty much everything they wanted to do in game two. The Pacers were very comfortable, it felt, on both ends in that game. And I think Milwaukee has to at least make them uncomfortable on one end or the other to win another game without Giannis.
Yeah, the speed was fascinating to me. And I pointed this out after game one, like when the Pacers looked good for however amount of time in that third quarter, when they actually were, they were threatening to make it a game. They didn't, but they were threatening to. is they were doing that thing where they sprint out of bounds and grab the ball after turnovers and misses to like make sure their pace is high, even if they're not playing well. They did that the entire game too, right? And I think that was really important for them to be like, yo, even if we're not making shots, like if we play faster than them, we have a chance and we can wear guys down. And so that's why my biggest L, and by the and the reason I think the Pacers are happy with 1-1 is they have home court advantage now. But my biggest L was related to Giannis. And that's because I said, here's why I think the Pacers have a good chance. The Giannis minutes are amazing. The Dame minutes are pretty good. But when neither of them are on the floor, the Bucks sucked during the regular season. Like their net rating was ungodly bad. And so the fact that there was going to be stretches with neither of them on the floor in these first two games, I was like, oh, maybe the Pacers can steal one or both of them. And what's happened is they have won the Dame minutes in both games and lost the no Dame minutes in both games. And that's why it's been so fascinating to me the way this series has started, because it has both gone the way I thought it would in terms of the pace and the variance and Lillard being amazing and all that stuff. And it has not gone the way I thought in terms of the flow of the games and like how the Pacers keep winning it, certain random minutes. So I guess credit to both teams for finding solutions in their respective victories, and credit to shooting variance for some of this. But that's why I think it's been so fascinating so far. And what I think will be very interesting going forward is, can the Pacers do better in the no Dame minutes, and can the Bucks find a way to make it so the Dame minutes are better for all 48 instead of just first halves? Or is this right? 61 of his 69 points through two games are in the first half of the two.
I think that is. Yeah. The eight were in the second half of game two, zero of game one, which is bizarre.
It's nuts. So
I think the bench scoring has been a big part of that, right? Yeah, I think coming in, Indiana's bench really outplayed Milwaukee's bench. And in game one, it was the opposite. In game two, Milwaukee's bench did not play very well at all. But I still think the Bucks have at least been able to tread water in like the Chris Middleton and friends lineups that, frankly, in the regular season were pretty disastrous. Sometimes Griffin slash Prunty slash Doc, Bucks coaches, would rest Dame and Giannis at the same time to kind of maximize their minutes together, because of course the partnership between them, such a big story, such a big deal for the Bucks, yada yada. So okay, Chris, go out there and make it work. Not the best dribbler, and I think that has manifested itself a little bit in this series. They've actually been better, but still not great at, you know what, Pat Connaughton, just take the ball up against somebody who's not Aaron Nesmith and let's get set in the half court versus Nesmith and Chris like posting up 50 feet from the rim, and because that's not great for the Bucks offense. But I think Indiana's bench without Mathurin is having some trouble just being the force it was in the regular season.
Agreed.
And I think part of that is just, I know Tyrese Haliburton has not scored the ball at an exceptional clip, but obviously his playmaking and then Siakam's offense has, of course, been like the huge positives for Indiana. And without those two, it feels like the Pacers are finding less success. McConnell had some nice moments and kind of helped shut the door on the Bucks, but overall, I think Milwaukee's defended him fairly well, where he's killed the Bucks in years past. And there's just not that much else juice, it feels like, for Indiana outside of the starters right now.
That was my Pacers bench take. Is, you know, when Mathurin went down, I even said, like, McConnell's going to have to be the biggest beneficiary of this. And he was amazing for the last month of the regular season, to be clear. And then in game one, like, I'll remember this play for the rest of the series, even though McConnell in the second half of game two was really good. He drove and he kind of wiggled free from Pat Bev, and he got one of those fading eight-footers that he loves. But Brook Lopez was just right there and just third row blocked it. And so, like, if you're locked in with the game plan on that McConnell shot that he likes to get to and you're ready for it, it's just – it's not as nearly as threatening, right? And it shows the limitations that he can have. And, again, he figured stuff out and played better in the second half of game two in a meaningful way. But that was what made their bench so brilliant, was he was amazing. And so that being cut off really hurt them, and their bench was just, they had a lot of no playoff experience guys in game one. Their bench was terrible. In the first half of that game. So if they can get some of that mojo back, I think that would help in those non-day minutes, because if Dame keeps playing like this, it's going to be tough to keep up in those. So here's,
well, tell me if same I'm, for Siakam though.
Yeah, we'll get to them. So here's why, tell me if I'm wrong here. Here's why I think both teams are happy with this.
Yeah.
So far, Pacers won a road game. Right. That's obviously significant, and taking advantage without Giannis on the road for sure for these two games. I thought there was, I guess, maybe a chance he played in game two, but whatever. I'm not so plugged in, obviously. They won. They got one without him. They got a road win. They now have home court advantage, air quotes. the Bucks have to feel good because they won without Giannis, right? Yeah, they got exactly. one at all. So bought themselves time for him to potentially come back. And the formula for that was not like so weird. I mean, Dame was amazing, but he didn't score in the second half and they still won by 15. So I think both, to correct me if I'm wrong, but I bet both teams kind of feel good about a split, or at least like fine with that being the result so far.
I think both teams feel fine. I would imagine Indiana feels a little better, not I just agree. Because they won more recently, although that helps, right? The ebb and flow of the series. But I think if you're the Pacers, I mean, we don't know when Giannis, no one knows when Giannis will come back. I mean, there was a report from Shams Charania today that said he's not running yet, but then we've also heard he's close. We've heard all these Doc other said things, he's running. Whatever. Yeah, we're hearing like we're getting. I hate when we get so niche in these things. Yeah, not a, he loves that bit, and I like that he made the reporters finish it. Like he wasn't just going to say it himself. I've come to the conclusion Doc is hilarious, but like fans of the team may not think so. But if you're objective, if you're truly objective and a fan of comedy, he's very funny.
You know what's funny?
I'm just trying to enjoy it.
Not that anyone really cares about like the inside baseball stuff, but. You know, he used to be the Clippers coach, right? And so LA media is huge. So all his pressers would be like as long as possible everywhere he went. So his pregame media for game two was like 4.5 minutes. And it ends, he goes, wow, awesome. So funny.
He's just a happy go. Straight from the golf course. How could he not be in a good mood all the time? To take the world's hardest job, apparently. Nobody else wanted. What were we talking about? I actually don't remember.
Giannis running, Shams.
Oh, Giannis. Yeah. Whatever. So, you know, I think Indiana has to feel good. You know, either he doesn't play at all, I think, in these next two games, or maybe like a limited version game four. Maybe now he goes and plays game three. We don't know. The injury report won't be out for a few days, and I would assume he will start it as doubtful, and we won't really know until right before the game on Friday either way.
Agreed.
Regardless, I don't think personally he will play in game three and maybe not in game four, but we'll see. But Indiana has to be going, okay, this guy's averaged 40 on us, and we've beat the Bucks regardless. I mean, I don't think they're going to be scared when Giannis is back, but obviously he's a huge part of the Bucks team and had more success than Dame against Indiana's defense. You know, we go take care of home court, and then we just have to do that one more time, and we're done with the series. So I think they probably feel better until/if Milwaukee wins another one in Indiana, when then I think it probably shifts back until game five. Like if Milwaukee wins game three and loses game four by 40 points without Giannis, I still think the Bucks then are probably like, that's fine. Go ahead. Doesn't carry over to the next game. Like if we can bring back Giannis for game five, we just need two more home wins and then we're done. So I do think it sounds so silly and reductive for just to be like, whoever won the last game feels good. But I do kind of think it's like it's a series, even though it's a long 7-game series, it's still kind of like the margins are so slim game to game with the Bucks injury situation that these early games are even more important than they usually would be.
There is some truth to it being who won the most recently, right? Like Pacers fans, at least who were tweeting at me incessantly after game one, were like, game two is a must win. I'm like, nah, win. I don't know about that. And then they win it, and it's like, well, they have all the momentum now. I'm like, wait, hang on. Yeah. Wait a minute. They were just losing the series like 5 hours.
It was do or die, and then they did. So now they're about to win the series. Yeah.
Oh, bring on the Knicks, baby. Yeah, it's crazy how quickly they can play. And there's obviously more to it than that because of all the dynamics we said. But it made
heading into game two, somebody tweeted at me, like, we need this Knicks series to be long. I was like, We don't need to focus on anything outside of Bucks and Pacers right now. We are one game into the series.
Oh, I'm focused on Knicks Sixers because those games are all incredible games.
Yeah, that's what I'm focused on with those games.
Oh my God. Okay, look, we can't dance around the stars.
Yeah.
Dame was so good in the first half of game one, Ty, that I Googled the playoff scoring record, right? Like,
oh my God.
Like, and I had, what, 35 and a 72? Half? Are you kidding? 63.
72? Oh, wow. MJ. Jordan, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Close to the half record. I think that's 39. I mean, it was ridiculous, right? And then Siakam scored more points than him by the time the game was over. And then he had 26 in the first half 2 days later. And Siakam once again outscored him in that game. But obviously, he's been amazing, right? Like, incredible. Even when he's not scoring or his role's off ball, Andrew Nembhard is holding his jersey, basically, to keep him out of the play. And Siakam has just been like a slow drip, 8 points a quarter. It's different, but both dominant. That's been the story of the series, is those two and them leading their teams to victories, like the biggest story. What do the Bucks need to do to slow Siakam? And what do you think the Pacers can do better against Dame? Or is this just the result of, like, finally he is the guy on offense and has the ball this much?
Yeah, I mean, I remember our conversation around the in-season tournament, and you were like, if Dame shoots well and Giannis is playing, like, how can the Pacers probably guard the Bucks? Like, they probably just can't.
Right.
And I think they probably can figure out a way to guard him. Honestly, I don't know if they can guard him better. I think they've pretty much thrown everything. I'm not sure how much else you can throw at one single player. I think maybe you just need him to cool off a little bit, which I would assume will happen at some point. I mean, again, there were the second halves, but just for like a full game. I mean, the shots he's making are incredibly difficult. Oh, I think the only adjustment,
unreal.
I think they have to be almost give him some of the screen curling, because I do think the free throws get him going in a certain way, and he's not taking like 20 a game, but the 7 to 9 he takes are, I think, really important to him in the Bucks. I think being a little less aggressive on those curl screens, as bad as it seems, I do think you'd almost rather let him shoot it than foul him. And I think he's been getting them hard pretty consistently on that action. And again, they don't do it 10 times a game, but I do think that is the one thing you could probably clean up a little bit, but I'm not a coach. I can't like tell you how else to defend him when they've thrown all this stuff at him. So I think Indiana's defense has probably been pretty good, given that the other Bucks haven't done enough. I think when they would have to change is if the other Bucks start to do something, anything throughout a game, to then maybe bend away from Dame a little bit. But until that happens, I think you probably just keep covering in the same and try not to foul him, right? Like, I don't think you can throw any more attention at him. I don't think you should triple team him full court, but I think the current plan has worked for them. I think they'll keep doing it until a Chris Middleton, a Bobby Portis, some role player gets hot from three, is consistently able to beat the defense when it bends, but they really haven't. I mean, Brook Lopez knocked down a bunch of shots in the first half and in the second half, but they just ran past him, so it didn't hurt as much for Indiana. I think really like a Portis or Middleton needs to get going, and then that's when Indiana might need to adjust. But until then, I would probably just keep doing the same thing, frankly, and, you know, hope. We'll get back to the episode in just a moment. But first, a word from our friends at Prize Picks, presenting sponsor of the Eurostep and America's number one fantasy sports app with more than 5 million members. Prize Picks is the most fun and exciting way to get in on the action while you watch playoff hoops. All you do is pick more or less on two or more player stats for a shot to win up to 100 times your cash. Prize Picks is the most fun I've had winning up to 100 times my money this basketball season. And because of the playoffs, the stars mean more. Starred players on the Prize Picks board could give you a 10% payout boost if they are in your winning lineup this week on Prize Picks. Looking at the playoff board, I am taking, I'm going to take more than on Pascal Siakam's points total, given the way he's shot these first two games. And I will do the same for Damian Lillard. I do not believe these teams will slow down those players enough, so I'm going to proceed with those two, and you too can pick out some players to choose more or less on in their categories. Download the Prize Picks app today and use code EUROSTEP for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code EUROSTEP on the Prize Picks app, and you can get your first deposit matched up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, so first of all, I just realized I used the same bullet point twice on the side of the graphic and meant to put adjustments, and one of those are not keys. Second of all, to respond to everything you just said, the only thing that's like, this isn't even something that's just worked, air quotes, right? when they double team him 75 feet from the basket, it's just an instant 4-on-3. And like the fact that they're willing to live with that says everything about how well the team is playing. Like,
yeah, and maybe about the rest of the Bucks rotation.
Well, like
a little bit.
Middleton and Pat Bev being the assist leaders. Like to me, that's because they're like, nope, game, get the ball out. Someone else pass, someone else set up. And I think that's been a fascinating thing. The only thing that's saved, again, air quotes the Pacers, I mentioned the 61 of his 69 points in first half so far is, correct me if this is just me like making something out of nothing, but he turns 35, right, in July?
I think so, yeah.
Like, he cannot do that for 40-something minutes, right? Like, there is a level of, especially with the attention he gets, and he has to defend because Nembhard can dribble.
Turns 34.
That's right. So, like, in the second half of game two, I don't know if this is the only reason they were doing this, but they did put him in the quarter, and it gave them a ton of spacing because of how Drew was guarding him. But I kept being like, isn't him having the ball better than this? And my only theory that made sense was that he's just exhausted. And I don't know if that's actually why, because that helped the Pacers to me. I mean, the Bucks couldn't punish that enough. There's a way they can, and then it would work fine to just have him stand in the corner for a few possessions. But when he's doing that and his defense is mostly limited by his size, like, he's a smart player, he's in the right spots, but you know, he's slower at his age.
Well, some bad defensive moments game two. A couple really bad ones on them hard that were
very Drew was awesome. Great at punishing those too. So that perplexed me. Why do you think they did that? Do you think there's something else to it?
I think he was exhausted. And I think some of those moments, it felt like Indiana had gotten it to like 15. And I honestly, like, you know, obviously didn't ask Dame about this and not in his head. It felt to me a little bit like, let's see if the 4-on-4 offense can do anything. And like, if we kind of get back in, then I'll exert myself hard enough to continue doing this again and give us a shot. But like, if we're just dead, like, it's game two, we're down already pretty significantly, let me not use the whole tank in game two. And I know they have off days and whatever, and you know, maybe people would get mad if that was the mindset, but I kind of had the feeling of just like, all right, is everyone else just going to die on the vine here? Because if that's the case, then maybe I'll just save it and not work this hard to be double teamed and take hard shots.
And he had what, Achilles something and something,
he had
right?
He had an adductor, yeah. I think. And he's been dealing with some stuff. Like,
those don't just vanish into thin air, right? So
yeah,
again, I'm guessing, but that's the only theory that made sense to me. I get it a few times, like every so often, like, let's try him in the corner and work with some space. But they did it so much in the second half of
game. That is a bad habit they have sometimes, too. That I think in game one, I thought it was more of that. That I think sometimes, you know, they like to play to the advantage and get the 4-on-3s, even though they're not great at it, just because, you know, they just don't. Like, I think the Pacers just don't care about Pat Bev on offense, and that has been difficult. He's able to create shots for others, but they're just kind of like, go to the rim if you want. It has not worked well for him so far, which is troubling. But I do think sometimes the Bucks buy into that too much of like, all right, let's make the smart play, quote unquote. I talk about this a lot. Like, okay, Brooke Lopez is open again. Let's get him the ball and shoot. And it's like, it's the playoffs. Like, and it worked in game two, made all of them. But, you know, teams don't care if Brooke Lopez shoots, right? Like, they don't want Dame to shoot. And I
said that before the series. I said, they're not going to guard Brooke. It's the easiest option. Yeah.
100%. And I think sometimes the Bucks need to be almost more selfish and be like, Giannis and Dame both. Dame, I think, more than anyone. Giannis will take his damn shots. But to be like, you know what, I just need to go shoot. Like, no one else is doing anything. Like, I don't care what the right play is. I don't care what the point guard play is. Like, I'm just going to go take it. And I think he missed some layups. And I think he wanted calls he didn't get, whatever. Like, he wasn't able to convert at the rim a few times. And I think it wasn't like he didn't do anything in the second half of game two. Game one, though, I didn't like the approach. But I wonder if a little bit of it was like, we're up big, like, just take it easy.
So let's go to Siakam now, which, listen, I thought Siakam would be their best player in the series, both because he's experienced and because he's good, and because the Bucks, especially that Giannis, don't have, like, anyone great to put on him. Yeah. I did not expect this. Holy smokes.
Has first he been player on? To score that much on that field goal percentage in the playoffs since Wilt Chamberlain, I was told on our podcast.
When you get first since Wilt in anything, it's so the other ones I bookmarked these. He is the first player since Shaq in the 2000 finals with 35 points, 10 rebounds, and 60% shooting in each of the first two games in a series. And then the other one is second player in Pacers NBA franchise history to have 35 points in consecutive playoff games. The other one being Reggie Miller. So Reggie, the best Pacer ever, the guy who smoked the Pacers in the 2000 finals and pretty good company. So some of this is not all of it, because he's not playing all of his minutes with Ty. Some of it is when he's with Ty, they're cutting off Ty so much that he's doing a great job against the fractured defense of getting to the right spot. And he's just drawing these elbow jumpers that they probably can't live with anymore. And that's been huge. The other thing is the Bucks have been willing, a little too much to me sometimes, to switch a small onto him. And the Pacers are so good about this. They really got better at it as the season went on with Siakam. If he gets a small on him, especially an early switch, they drop what they're doing, they're going to the post up, right? Because he punishes that. They had the one in the first half of game two where he posted up Dame and it was like 22 on the shot clock. They threw it full court to get it down there to him. They messed it up, but like that's how aggressive they're like, yes, this is good for us. And he's just punished every single matchup advantage he's had. And so some of this is because Giannis is out and some of this because he's been unbelievably good, but they've had no answer for him so far. What can the Bucks do better? And how much of this is just like, well, if he makes all these elbow jumpers and mid-rangers, there's just not a lot you can do.
Yeah, I think they've got to adjust what they're willing to do on defense. Clearly their focus coming into the series was like, we're just going to always throw two at Halliburton and try and take him away. But I think it's just not working. I think they're not good enough at doubling, frankly. I think they probably forced like one or two steals between the two games total. And, you know, they've mucked up some possessions. Like, it works occasionally in Indiana to take a bad shot. But more often, especially in game two, and I think even in game one, I mean, the potential assist stats are out there that, like, you know, Halliburton wasn't just, like, useless. He threw a bunch of passes that, you know, the shots didn't drop, but that they were still shots that were, I thought, worse in game one. I thought the Bucks did a better job in game one of getting shots you can live with than they did in game two. But I just don't think you can do that anymore. Like, I think you have to try and leave Pat Bev on the island and whoever else ends up on Halliburton and just guard him one-on-one and try and make him a scorer. I mean, this is how I think you have to approach a lot of the great passers in the league. Like, even Jokic, I think the Bucks had the most success they've had against Jokic by
even just going like
Giannis too. I mean, most players. I mean, if you're a gifted passer, I just think you can't really double those guys. I think Luka too, like whenever teams double, like the insane full court bounce pass and late in the last night's Clippers Mavs game, like these guys are just too good, except for Embiid, who you can double. But outside of him, you just can't double these players. I think that most of them are just too good at it. And I think that's been the case for Halliburton too. I think they got away with it game one because they rotated better and because the Pacers were just ice cold, and then you can. But clearly Indiana showed, you know, even though they weren't a great shooting team post All-Star break, they can knock them down, especially, you know, after I think Carlisle tightened up the rotation in a smart way and there were less liabilities out there. So I think I wouldn't just go to straight doubling Siakam either. Like, I think he's a pretty good playmaker too, but I think you have to just kind of live with just allowing guys to get beat sometimes, and you just can't switch with Siakam. I think that was clear. And there was one possession that drove me nuts in game two. Dame ended up on him and Lopez is right next to him. And I was like, you got to just scram it right now. Like, if you give up, I think it was maybe Shepard or Nesmith on the perimeter. And I was like, if you give that guy a shot with Dame closing up to him, fine. You can't just leave. And Brooke goes out to the perimeter and Siakam's like, oh, I'll take the 2 points. I think he got an and one out of it. I think they just they can't do that. And they need to scram immediately, scram switch the small out if it happens. Because like you say, I think everyone knows Siakam is good, a great player. I thought when they got him, it was a great move because, you know, if they trap Ty, this exact thing, he could play against the mismatches and the advantages. And he's been so good at it, whether it's a small on him. And I think his counter to Brooke guarding him has been really good too.
Yeah, I was going to get
past him a couple times. And the jumper, I mean, my God, when he hit 75% of his threes in game two, I was like, okay, if he's going to knock down that many threes, they can't guard him if he's going to do that. They need to hope his three doesn't fall like that. But clearly the midi is locked in. I don't know if Brooke can take real shifts on him anymore either.
Okay, so to the passing point, really concerning Ty, the reason I bring up Giannis is like, that the doubling them works if you really, really, really take them out of shooting. But once they get the balance right, then it doesn't work, right? Because that's why game one was so effective for the Bucks, is Ty didn't shoot. He took 7 shots. And the only times he took 7 or fewer shots in regular season, he played like 25 minutes, right? He played 38 in game one. They did really well there. So what happened is they really influenced him to pass in a way that like gooked up the Pacers offense. And I bring up Giannis to say, when the Pacers beat the Bucks one time this regular season, they were doing that thing where they formed a wall. And Giannis said after that game that, like, I've seen that coverage and I've beaten it before all the time. But in this particular game, for some reason, as a natural passer, I just wanted to pass all the time. And so it just, if you get them to over-index on one or the other, you have succeeded. And so that happened to the Bucks on Halliburton in game one, but not so much in game two. So I agree with you in general. The other Siakam thing you nailed that both teams are talking about is the cross-matching, right? Like, Brooks too slow if he gets him any sort of space far from the basket. But it's really hard to switch that back because Miles Turner took so many shots in game one because he too could just, you know, get ahead of steam, and I thought
he was like as big of a factor. I mean, Siakam is the biggest, but I thought his play in game two is what turned it from a close game to the Pacers run. He made so many big, not all wide open either. Huge game for him.
So if they go back to Brook on Turner, I bet that the Pacers are like, yep, Miles Turner's in every screen now, right? And and they try to, I don't know if it'll work, but that's what, I bet they'll try more of that. And Turner now has at least more confidence than he did. What was he, 5 of 19 or 5 of 18 in game one? So it's hard. It's hard for the Pacers to defend Dame. It's hard for the Bucks to defend Lillard. And I just got that backwards. The Bucks to defend Siakam and the Pacers to defend Dame. And it could just be a story of the series. And that leads me to the final thing I want to get to. Adjustments. Everybody's favorite thing to guess at.
We love adjustments.
In the postseason. Well, the Pacers ones after game one were a little obvious, and they did all of them. The ones that were less obvious that were cool, to me at least, were Top and Siakam with no reserve center. I thought they would go to that at some point, but not that early. The Bucks going zone against the McConnell lineups was really smart to me. That was fun because those started at the same time in the game. Pacers obviously needed to tighten the rotation, and they did. Bucks changed up their rotation. We were talking about that before we started recording, right? That's the stuff that happens every postseason.
Yeah. Well, now, less guys as we go, of course, which always happens every series too.
Both teams have a win now. What's next? What do you think the Bucks need to look? I mean, besides the star stuff we just talked about, what's next?
Yeah. Well, I think the star stuff is related. I do think they need to try and find better answers to help contain Siakam throughout their roster. I hope that Doc gives Andre Jackson Jr. a real chance to play in the series. I don't know. I mean, he got in a little bit before the rest of the garbage time guys. Like, it was like 2 minutes before where there were still some Bucks real players out there. And I was like, okay, maybe is this taking advantage of this opportunity to see how these young guys play against the Pacers starters, who Carlisle left in there for, I think, like 4 more minutes, I guess, when the Bucks had gone garbage time, which it actually reminded me of the Ballgate game, because for a minute, the Bucks all young guy lineup kind of was like cutting into the lead. And I was like, wait, is this going to get interesting? And then they just couldn't hit a three. And then I think somebody drew a foul. And I was like, okay, the intrigue's over. The fun is over. Would have been the most fun way for Milwaukee to steal both games, but I can't really expect that to happen. But I think Crowder has been one of the most disappointing players. And just, you expect the offense to be streaky. That's always been his MO. But he's supposed to be like the tough physical defender and should be the guy, I think, when you look at their rotation without Giannis, who's like, okay, that's the guy who should be able to come out and guard Siakam. And he's just been a traffic cone. And I think either he has to play better, which that's the adjustment we don't talk about. It's always, you know, throw that guy out of the rotation, give this guy minutes. That's what we do. I think, you know, more realistic for these teams and these staffs is trying to find a way for a guy to have more success out there. But whether it's Crowder playing better or one of these young guys that the Bucks haven't used consistently, I think you probably have to throw someone else out there just to be quicker and try and contain these Pacers players and not be as slow. Their problem, though, is it's hard for them with the bigs because Bobby hasn't played well. Yeah. He needs to play better. And Brook is just slow. They don't really have anyone else. So I wonder if we see a very small lineup with Chris at the five at some point in game.
Whoa.
They threw that out with Bud a couple times just for a few minutes. We haven't really seen it under Doc, but Doc's also coached the Bucks for 5 minutes. So who knows?
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The play better adjustment's always
it's a good one. It helps.
Pacers loved it in game two.
Yeah, a great lever to pull.
It was great. Yeah, Rick told them to make more threes specifically, so that was a smart decision by him as the coach. Okay, I have a couple things that I wonder if the Pacers will get to at some point. It's always weird after wins, right? Like naturally after a loss.
You don't want to do too much.
Yeah, there's so yeah, but if you don't do enough, yeah. You know, that's I asked Rick about that before game two. It's like, how do you prep for expected adjustments? Because then if it doesn't come, like, did you waste time? You know. It's like that's part of the battle of the playoffs. So the Pacers just won, obviously. They're going to be like, we got to keep playing with that pace. And our rotation was good. Okay, one thing I thought about, and I don't think this would work, but I'll be curious about it, is if Dame's scoring has been, I don't know what the exact percentage is. I probably should have done the math before. I just nonsensed this off. But like shockingly large percentage of his buckets, either from three or the foul line. That's not a bad thing. That's just the reality. Is there an argument to put Haliburton on him because he's taller than McConnell and Nembhard, like a lot taller? And if you wear Haliburton out and he can't play offense, then it's a stupid idea. But like if he's just going to be making this percentage of shots anyway, just totally cut the Pat Bev water off with McConnell and Nembhard and then make it a different kind of game that way. But Dame could just. The problem is if they don't need screens anymore and Dame can just ISO him and then you can't get a second guy to him because there's no screen, then it doesn't work. So I only think of that because of the size. Like it's hard to defend Dame with size given the Pacers starting five. So I don't think the Pacers will do this, but I thought about it. The other thing I wonder if they'll do is, especially if they keep somehow not losing, getting smoked in the no Dame minutes. It doesn't make sense that this is happening, but it's happened in both games. If the Pacers, who ran zone for, I think, 11 possessions per synergy in the regular season, if they would try it in the no Dame minutes. I don't know how that would go, but there's not really a point guard for the Bucks when Dame's not out there. They have some good shooters, but no one you're like terrified of, like we talked about leaving Brook open. Rick Carlisle's like big thing that he's known for, going zone in the finals against the Heat. That was 13 years ago, but I wonder if they would try it in the no Dame minutes. That was the Bucks went zone in game two. Those are my only things I'm curious about, because maybe the answer is just live with Dame like this, but the way that those minutes have gone have been crazy. That's the way
the starters defend each other, I think, is one of the most interesting ones that could change. I wonder, would they swap Nesmith and Nembhard?
Yeah, that's what I said after game one was, do you just try to get Stiles on Lillard by putting Nesmith on him? But I mean, Nembhard to Middleton, 7 inches of height, right? Like
that. Yeah, and Chris, that's what Chris thrives in. I think one thing with the Bucks that I want them to do even more, or would expect them, they should set up Chris like he's a 2002 power forward. Like, don't even let him dribble. I'm serious. Just put him on the block and throw the ball down.
Turn around and shoot, baby.
If you do that, like, he's very, very effective. And, you know, you're watching him post up Nembhard at 50 feet from the rim, and that's less effective. So I think that would be the Bucks probably pretty quick counter to that. I think Milwaukee, I'm really interested to see, do they make a starting lineup change, or do they just sub Bobby out for someone else earlier? And I do think, like, they've started them together. Bobby's offense has been important. I do think he's maybe been their best one-on-one Siakam defender. I mean, no one's been very good at it, but I think he's been okay. It just they haven't done it much because he's always trapping and blitzing. They just need to not do that anymore. But I would just try and have him guard Siakam more. And then if you bring someone in besides Beasley after he was so bad, who would it be? Do you try to bring in more size, more athleticism? I don't know. It's going to be interesting, but I would imagine they pull a different lever for Siakam because he's just been way too good and you just can't concede him shots anymore. I think they, after game one, I feel like they were like, all right, he won't shoot like this again. And they were right because he shot better and it didn't work out at all.
That's bad. That's what I thought about Dame. I don't know if he ended up with a better percentage. I was like, I can't do that again. Oh, yes, he actually totally can do that again.
Yeah, I think both teams are kind of like, man, what are we supposed to do right now? And I feel like at least Indiana likes their on-ball options a little bit more. Yeah. Whereas I feel like the Bucks right now, I think Doc has to get a little creative with how we guard Siakam, because there is no ready-made fit. I mean, we're talking about second-round rookies as the guys to bring in and try it, which is not a great place to be.
You nailed the Nesmith thing with Lillard's interesting, because the Rick did the first obvious rotation card, which is go from 11 to 8. 11 was too much, but whatever.
Yeah.
And what does Windhorst always say? Play 8, trust 7 or whatever is like how coaches think. Okay, they went 8. Then the next thing is a starting lineup change, right? Or a lineup change. And I'm not saying the Pacers should do this, especially because Nembhard was incredible in game 2. But like, if you go Nesmith on Lillard, you don't just go Nembhard on Middleton. You go Toppin starting probably, right? And then Nembhard can still
or
play.
Or Shepherd.
Yeah, or Shepherd. And then you have the required height at least to defend all the guys, but you lose a lot, especially if Nembhard's a 20-point scorer as well. Who's hounding Dame the whole game? He was so good in game 2. So now I don't even think they can consider a lineup change.
Not after that offensive game.
Yeah, they can't think about it. That's just why I think, do they want to try Ty on there, or is that just a total waste of his energy and not worth any sort of effort? But go ahead.
I wonder, can the Bucks? It's just so hard with the pace. I think that's what stopped them from doing it, but I mean, they play so much bigger, even without Giannis. Now that Obi Toppin's like the only big, I mean, it's Turner and no one else. Do you try and go and mash a little bit more? But I don't know if they can afford to. Like, I think every time they rolled Brook, if he didn't dunk on someone, the Pacers were at a 4-on-5 the other way and were just at the rim immediately. But that is an advantage. I just don't know if the Bucks could actually capitalize on it.
Well, that actually struck me a little in game 2. I didn't even realize it until after the game. Only 36 points in the paint for the Bucks in that game. That is so low that I'm like, are they logging that wrong? Like, is that
they have no drivers outside of Dame without Giannis, and even Dame, he struggled to finish at the paint in that game. Not in the first half, he didn't. In the second half, he did.
But the risk is, and I think Kevin Pelton's done a good reporting on this, the best transition chances come after missed shots at the rim. And so if you're missing those, then the Pacers are like, great, let's go. And, you know, you already mentioned it, like then Brooks far from the rim. It's not an easy thing. So the little stuff, baby. It's different to talk about adjustments after wins and losses. I didn't realize how much different it was. Also, when the Pacers just looked silly in game 1 and not in game 2. So
credit to them, because they bounced back fast. I mean, that was one where I was like, can the Bucks jump on them 2 games in a row and really kind of put themselves in a great position? And they got their stuff together very quick. I mean, not quickly enough for game 1, but they were much better in the second half. And then game 2, I thought all 4 quarters, they were really able to play without, you know, many record scratch moments.
And now we see how the young Pacers respond to a win. You know, it's a different feeling. Like, you can't mess around for 2 days. You got to lock back in right away. The Bucks have done that a lot. They've been down 2-0 in a series and then won the NBA championship 10 days later. Yeah. So they are no stranger to this.
My favorite stat is they never led after 48 minutes in game 1s of the championship year. They swept Miami, but it went to OT.
What?
So they're very used to being down. Their season Heat.
Yeah, that's right.
They just lost game 1 of the Magic before they got bounced out of the bubble.
That's right. Golly. That's a good stat.
They won this one. They won against Chicago, and then just Miami in the championship year. But they lose a lot of game 1s, and they very rarely start 2-0 as well. It hadn't happened since I think they swept Miami that year as well.
Siakam has come back from down 0-2 in a series you are also familiar with.
I actually drew a comparison to Kawhi. I think he is playing on that level right now. And I also think if you double one pass away, he'll be able to make you pay the same way. I'll rewatch that series. They were doubling off Fred VanVleet one pass away from Kawhi. And it was like that meme of like the spaceman, like, no, no. Just let Kawhi shoot 50% on 2s. Just please do that instead. I think that's how they have to defend Siakam.
What is the NBA? This is not for this podcast. We'll talk about this after. What is the NBA today if the Bucks win game 3 overtime? Like, it'd be so
different. It was so close. There was an out-of-bounds call in that game with Siakam and Chris that was so close.
It'd be so different.
I don't want to think about it too much.
We don't need to talk about 2019 anymore.
Yeah.
I'll be back tomorrow on Locked On Pacers, talking only from a Pacers perspective about this series and the keys to Game 3. What will be coming on the Eurostep?
We will be back after Game 3. We're doing post games every game, and then we're sprinkling in some other content between as well, including, you know, this interview here. So everyone go check out Locked On Pacers for the opposition intel, rivals here. But yeah, we'll be doing our post games and then a little bit more sprinkled throughout too.
You just said rivals and it made me laugh because I kept asking guys during the season, like, is this a rivalry? And they're all like, no, not till the playoffs. So, well, now it's the playoffs and I haven't asked anybody.
Yeah, I think so. Well, now you got your assignment for these next couple days of practices.
We need there've been chippy moments, but not a real, they're not fake, but there hasn't been a big thing yet. Offsetting text, whatever. Okay, we'll move on. So yeah, we'll see. Should be fun. Everybody give Ty a follow at, please let people know where.
At Ty Windisch on Twitter/X/whatever. And GSPN.info is the easiest place to find the pod links, but also wherever you're watching or listening to Locked On Pacers works too. If you just type in Eurostep, GYROstep.
The best podcast name in the internet space. I'm on that same app at Tony R. East. I don't call it by its name anymore.
Yeah.
Back tomorrow with more coverage of the Pacers and Bucks series. Thanks all for listening to us talking today. We'll both catch you soon.